Can you be around me in Kima? It's too hard. We're not here to tell you that we're going to do something for you this time. What we're going to do is try to show what kind of problems we think you have, we all have, in our area, in the Nana area. And we're going to try to show you that only you can solve them. We can solve the main problems that we have in our area. The Nana people can't. We're too far gone to help you with those problems that we see. We can give you support. But you'll see that when we get through meeting tomorrow night, after meeting most of the day tomorrow, that the main problems that we have in our villages can only be solved by you people. And it's going to take everybody's help to deal with the problems. What I want to do now is kind of give you a little bit of history about how things got the way they are in our area, in Alaska, and in this area. And
well,
there's some more maps here.
Our problems began about our main problems. Began around 1600. Around 1621 or so. If I have a United States map, I can show you. While they're fixing it.
We have a bunch of colleagues.
You're fired. About 1621 or so, we had some Nalomis coming from Europe. And when they came there, they were looking for a better life. Because back in England and in Europe, where they came from, the land was already owned by somebody else. The king and the nobility, all their descendants, they owned the land. So the land wasn't free. All those Nalomis who came over here, the only thing they could look forward to was hard work all their life. They tried to plant till the soil and plant things, and they'd have to pay rent to the king or to the princes. And so when they came here, they saw land, all kinds of land. And back in England, or wherever they came from over here, the only way they could have power, money and power, was to own land. So they knew that if they were going to have wealth, lots of money, and eventually power, when the more people came, they had to have the land. But the problem was there was already Itkinets there. I mean, all over. Millions of Indians were living in this part of the world. And so it took from 1600 to about 1880 or 1885 to take all this land, about 250 years or more, to take that land from the Itkinets. And the Indians at first, they tried to live with these people. And they gave them some land, they traded for few things, you know, few pots and, you know, different things. But too many people came, and they couldn't control them from taking their land. They tried to get the king to control their own people, but they couldn't do it. And so, the king's people, they began to take the land. They're supposed to administer it, but they started taking it. And of course, the Indians, they tried to fight to protect their land. But they were too many. And so they started making deals to try to keep the land. They say, well, all right, you want my land, you can have only so much and leave us alone, and they make a deal. But nothing stopped them. So the only way the Indian could try to protect his way of life was to fight, to keep his land, and to keep his language, and to keep his Indian way. But this land, they looked at it in a different way. For them, Nalalmi, it meant dollars. For the Indian, it was part of his life. He didn't own it. He just used it, just like our people use it. And so, no matter what the Indian tried to do to keep his land, it wasn't going to work. Right here in North Carolina, by the 1800s, early 1800s, around 1825, they thought that if they did what the government said, if they got educated, if they developed their own economy, they even learned how to write the Cherokee language, their language, they did such a good job that they were better off than most of the Nalogmis that lived in the around them. They had their own writing system, they had their own lumber mills, they had their own little mines, they had a better education system, they had better buildings, but it wasn't enough. President Jackson moved them all the way from here back into this area over here in the wintertime, and they made them move. So the Indians, they had no choice, and they lost all of this land, except for about 50 million acres today that they own. Thank you, Tom. They only own about 50 million acres today, and there might be 500,000 of them. Indians. Up here in Alaska, we have 44 million acres, and there might be 65,000 of us living here now. So the Indians, they went to war, and they died to try to protect their land, and they lost it. And what they did is they put them on a reservation. And in those early days, after the Indians, they lost the war, this reservation was kind of like a prison. And sometimes it wasn't even where they came from. They were in another land, maybe some other tribe. And in the treaty, in their deal, if the Indians were strong, they might have made a good deal. But if they were weak and if they got beat, sometimes they would say that one man couldn't leave that reservation without permission. Even if the kids were starving, and if he was going to try to hunt, if he left without permission, that meant their deal was off, you know. That is, they could have probably shot the man. So these reservations is a symbol of defeat. They were beat. They were beat down. And but what was the government going to do? They sent them off to the worst land. And what was the government going to do with them? As the white people moved west with the railroads, and they were killing off the buffalo in the meantime, eating the same thing the Indians were eating. And so what they did was they started trying to educate them, you know, trying to take the long me out of them. So they can start working in the factory and do this and do that. But let's show you, this is not anything unusual. I'll tell you why, because let's look at the Nalaumi side of it. When people came to America from Europe, they needed lots of Nalaumis to fill up all that land that they took from the Indians. So they had millions of people. Millions of people. They came from Spain, from England, from France, from Portugal, from Holland, from everywhere in Europe they came. But when they came to America, they weren't American because there's no such thing. There's only Indians and Inupiats way up north. They hadn't found us yet. But so what they did was they had to make a new person. They had to get rid of this Italian. They had to get rid of this Spaniard. They had to get rid of this Englishman. They had to get rid of that Portuguese. So they had to create a new mind. They had to create an American. So what they did, of course, was they created an educational system, a school like this, right? And all those Italians and Germans and French and whatnot, they just says, well, you're going to learn English or else. And so what they started to do with these people, and they wanted to, because for them it was going to be better, right? They're going to have a chance to live because it was too tough over in Ireland or wherever they come from, all those different countries. So they wanted to try to belong and to become one of these people. Because they had to be loyal to America, because America itself was weak. They had no people to fight for them. They were weak. And they had to fight the Spanish, who had some of the land. They had to fight the French, who had some of the land. So when they brought these people over, they had to make sure that in their brain, that they weren't Italian or English or Spanish, they had to be an American. And they used the school to help make sure that they taught them how to be an American. The same thing that they've been doing to us since we had schools here. And but I believe, in thinking about this, that what's been happening to people like this, you know, when they came over, they might have brought their mom, you know, their grandfather, their grandmother, their mom and dad and their children, their uncle, their aunts, you know, because it was better, life was better, you know, they could get land and they could make a living. But what they started to do was this, when they try to nalog milok these nalog mis, the family started to fall apart, you know, because the grandfather didn't have no control anymore, or the father did not have any control anymore. And so to me, it has created lots of problems. Not only that, they moved too much. They were always moving this way. You know, you can't get an American to settle down. When they finally stayed in these little villages, then they started moving into the cities again. So the families, they broke apart like that. You know, and not only that, they might have started out poor, but in America, you know, land was money, you know? So everybody was trying to make money, that there's no status no more, you know, there's no kings and princes and queens and all that sort of thing. So not only were they moving across the land, they never stayed in one place, they started leaving their families, they also started making money. So the more money you make, you don't stay in a ghetto, you know, you don't stay in the little village, you move, you know, up the hill, bigger house, better house. So these people, they never had any real friends, right? They're always climbing up like this, you know, climbing on top of somebody, trying to steal his land. After all, they spent 250 years stealing Indian land. And it hasn't changed. These Indians, the Indians are still trying to hang on to their land. I mean, every year in Congress, somebody's trying to diglick their land. You know, their oil, their coal, their minerals, their gas. You know, it hasn't quit today. So where are we when we come to Alaska? Well,
there's a map.
Well, I went to school in Washington, D.C. for 3 years, between 1963 and 1966. And, of course, I grew up right around here, by Kotzebue and by Ipkutuk in that area, you know. I was a little Ilie Palura, just like lots of us are. And if it wasn't for my grandpa, my grandma, I probably wouldn't have survived. Anyway, back then, you know, everybody had to do their job, right? If I didn't chop wood, we'd stay cold, right? Or I'd get whipped, maybe. I mean, and if somebody didn't go get sheepfish, we might not go, you know. Everybody had to do their job because life was hard. And I spent my 13 or 14 years in this area. So everything that I expected to ever be, I guess, was created in my brain while I was just a little fella, you know. Anyway, I might have been just like lots of our people, because they start taking us away from our parents very young, because that's what they were doing with the Mitkunas down here. They took them from the reservation. They cut their hair, those long Indian braids. They made them take off their buckskins, and they put them on some cloth clothes and suits, and tried to make them look civilized, tried to make them just like the Nolomi. And they took them away to school, away from their parents and grandparents, so so that they would be able to make an alawmi out of them, so that they can be part of the workforce, right? Make a living.
In Alaska, for us, it began about 1741, when the Russians first showed up right about here with their ship. They didn't see it up there. Those Skindinavs, they went all the way over here, and they saw a mountain right about there in 1741. And while they were traveling, they saw the sea otters. I mean, this whole area was covered with sea otters, you know? They wanted fur. And of course, instead of land like we saw, meaning money, they saw that fur was worth a lot of money, and the big market was in China. So between 1741 and about the 1780s, about 40 years, those Russians, they came all across Siberia hunting for fur by, you know, four or five guys here. What they do is they maybe take a team of, say, five Cossacks, they were Nalongi, from the Russia. And within about 100 years, it didn't take very long for them to march across Siberia, because they had rifles. And so, about just after 1741, these bands of maybe four or five or ten fur hunters, they used to go out and hunt fur, and then they'd split the furs, you know. And when they heard about the fur down here, they started building these little ships. Just maybe nothing very big. They started coming over here, and they found these Aleuts. The Aleuts, there was about 25,000 of them when they started about this time. Well, it didn't take them but 100 years or so where the Aleuts were down to 2,000. The Aleuts almost got completely wiped out, because what they would do is they'd come to an island, and well, the Russians had guns. And they started forcing the Aleuts to hunt for them. They didn't, they'd keep shooting the men until the rest of the men agreed to go hunt for them. So the Russian ship would stay in the village eating all their food while the men were out hunting fur. Then they'd take all the fur, and because those Aleuts were good with the harpoons, and they had these kayaks, two-man kayaks. And so, anyway, the Russians were made slaves out of the Aleuts. They killed them. They brought diseases. Not only that, by the time the 1780s came around, Alexander Baranov took Aleuts. He took 600 kayaks. When he started using the Aleuts against the Tlinkits, because they killed off most of the fur seal down there, and they were coming into this area and all the way down to California. So the only thing, every time that the Nolawmi wanted something out of Alaska, the native people suffered. And and starting again in the, say, 1860s, I mean, in the meantime, our people, not only the Inupiats, but the Aleuts and the Iktus, they started dying off from disease, because these ships, you know, brought diseases that our people never had before, and they started dying. Smallpox, chickenpox, diphtheria, flu. Some of them started over here, because in this period, there was lots of activity. There was ships from all over traveling, from England, from Russia. They were going to the Aleutians, to Hawaiian Islands. And when they started whaling, our people began to suffer some more, because the whalers would come from America and from other places, and they'd spend the winter in Hawaii, and in the spring they'd
for about 30 or 40 years, they began to hunt the whale. It was business again. It was all they went after was, it was a business. And so they brought along with the, along with all kinds of good things like pots and pans and knives and stuff, they brought the alcohol. And they almost killed off the whale, the whales that used to come up in this area that people around here lived on, up in this area. And when they killed off most of the whale, then they started killing off the walrus because they had to make a payload, right? They had to make money. And so they started getting the animals that our people lived on, besides bringing alcohol and other diseases. And of course, then we had the gold rush, another money thing, and it brought some good things that our people could use, but it also began to change our way of life, and they began to, those miners began to hunt our animals, you know? So everything that happened, that came in from the outside, was bad for our people, where the native people, we lost about half of our population. It has taken us over 100 years to reach population level we had when they first came. So just from the pure standpoint of physically surviving, our people have suffered a great deal. You all know that. I mean, that's not any news. Anyway, so the Russians, they were here in Alaska just really for the money, because the Russian American Company was a business. And so they sold it to the United States in 1867. They sold what they had. And that was our argument. We said that they didn't have the right to sell it. Well, in 1966, some of us started deciding to, we decided that the federal government didn't own our land because we never sold it to them. And some of you may remember when we started trying to form NANA, the old, what we call Northwest Alaska Native Association. I remember that NOTAP is one of the villages that used to send somebody to our very first meeting. Charlie Bailey came down, I think, by boat. And because he was the head of the village then. And he was supporting what we were trying to do. And it was tough because it was hard to explain that all this land that we use in our area here, that it might be taken someday by the state, the new state. You know, Alaska became a state in 1959. So between 1959 and 1966, the state was beginning to select land, 104 million acres. The state was supposed to select. And what we said to the state was, no, you can't have 104 million acres because it's natives' land. So we tried and we fought real hard between 1966 and 1971. We tried as hard as we could without having to go to war. We tried to save our land. And we did the best we could. And in a way, we were doing it because, well, we knew that we had to fight for it because nobody was going to give it to us. And we knew that for 250 years, they had been taking the Indian land. And so we spent 5 years going back and forth to Washington and fighting with the state. And going to having lawsuits and trying to get the Nalalhis to give us back some of our land. And we're in Mana, we're going to end up with a little over 2 million acres of land. And we got some money, around $60 million or so. But, and so after, how many years now? 10 years now we've been operating Nana. And what happened was this. The reason things are so confusing, it seems mixed up, and I don't blame people for not knowing what happened, because it's not easy to understand it. Unless you understand the history. When the federal government worked with the Indians, they worked through the tribe. And they had a tribal council. Just like your IRA council or your traditional council. And this tribal council was their leadership. And I suppose it was their older leaders who, however they selected their leaders in those days. And that tribal council was responsible for their people. You know, make their laws, keep their traditions, you know, to take care of, to teach their people. They did everything they could to try to keep their people alive and take care of them. And not only did they pass laws, they also kept the courts so that they had their own courts. Their own courts. And they also did some business. They had a business committee or something. And so they were responsible for everything that happened in that reservation. But after a couple of hundred years of trying to use that system, the American government decided that it wasn't working because those Itkinuks, they weren't Nalalmiyogin fast enough. They had their own system. So what they did, well, starting in 1884, they started trying to break up those reservations. Because if you had a bunch of Indians living on there, and they all had this tribal council trying to take care of their people, well, they weren't becoming like those Italians and those Englishmen. They weren't becoming Americans, see? Because those Italians, they want to survive. They want to talk their language. They want to do their dances. They want to remember their history. They want to be Indian. So what they did, starting in 1884, was they took that land and they said, well, for your own good, we're going to give you 160 acres each. Take that Indian land, that tribal land, and we're going to make you a farmer. So you'll know how it is to own a piece of land. Well, the only thing that did in about 30 years was the Indians lost about 90 million acres of land. Because just like they did to us, they gave them 20 years. They said, well, here's a piece of paper. You're a lucky guy. You got 160 acres and I hope you love that land and you're going to be a farmer and you're going to be just like me. A real American. Well, what happened was it didn't mean nothing to him. You know, he didn't know what, he don't care for private ownership because that land used to be for their tribe. They're all of their people. 20 years later, they could sell it.
And so they lost that. You know, for a bottle of booze, what did it mean to them? They sold their land. They're trying to do the same thing to us.
Two bottles.
And not only that, we don't have no tribal government to take care of us. What they did was this. They made it a state corporation, right? NANA is a business corporation. It's not a tribal government. It's a business. Buy and sell. Jobs. Right? That's what they did here. And now our government, what they did was they created a municipal government, right? That's the state. So we got two things that are part of the state. That's not something that we started. So what they've done is they took our land and they put it in a business corporation, not in a tribe. They put it in a business. Even, not only that, they put some of our land in this. It's not just our land, it's whoever moves into town. 1,200 acres right in the middle of town is municipal land. So what they've done is they've tried to make us part of the state. And what happened? What happened to the Inupiaq part? We got nobody, what I call the Inupiaq soul, Inupiaq spirit maybe, anything that's got to do with Inupiaq language, history, traditions, songs, anything that's got to do with our Inupiaq way that our people, however long our people been around, 20,000 years, whatever it was that made our people survive, there's no place for it. We have no home. There's no home for that in our present system. So that's why we're here. Because we began to look and see that no matter, because of the way they set it up, if we play the game, if we play the game like Congress said, we're going to lose it. We're not going to be, there's not going to be no Inupiaq left. There might be a few brown-skinned, black-haired people. But in our brain and in our heart, there will be no Inupiaq left. If we play the game like the Congress, like the government wants it to be played. Let's use this thing here. What we've been doing for how many years now? 10 or 15 years. We've been playing politics, right? When I was elected in 1966, I went around and I found out what people want. Well, that's what you're supposed to do if you're a leader, yeah? You're supposed to go find out what people want. So everybody said, well, geez, we got no electricity, we can't keep our food. We need airports, we need schools, we need houses, we need this, we need that. Well, to me, what you wanted was like an order. That was my responsibility. Same with Frank, same with Al. When they go to Juneau, they go to war and they fight. They fight for money to try to take care of these problems that we talked about earlier. So we went down there and we got everything that we could. We have done better than any place else in the state, in the rural areas, They already told you what we've got. We started out with electricity. We got water and sewer. We got houses. We got airports. We got schools. We got TV. You know, we got telephones. But these are things. Just something like this, you know? Things. And what this did, everything we did here, it made you dependent. Right? We have to go somewhere and say, I want, you know, somebody was giving it. But somebody was going to have to pay. Either the federal government or you. So now, what this means after 15 years, all that we've done is made you dependent. You got to go find this, right? You got to get that now to be able to afford everything we did with politics. So, and we also use politics to get the land settlement. Right, the land and money that Nana owns, that you own, the land and the money, it took politics to get it. Business, that's what we've been doing for 10 years now. We knew that if we didn't run Nana's business right, that we're going to lose your land. Because if we owed somebody money like Bering Straits, they lost all of their money. They're lucky to have their land. They got no money. All the money that 30 million or 40 million they're supposed to get, it's gone. They owe it to somebody. They got their land yet. So we got a little bit more, but no matter how good we run our businesses, it's not going to solve our main problem. Even if we came up with 5,000 or 10,000 or any amount of money that we come up with, it's not going to solve that problem we're talking about. And here, our people been hit over the head with education for how many years now? I mean, you probably went to school. And what them Nalalmis tried to do is they tried to make a Nalalmi out of your head. They wanted to make you a waitress. You know, they wanted to teach you how to have a job. Right? Even back in 1880 or 1885, they were talking about trying to teach you industry, which means you go to a factory and you make holes in something or you put something together and you work for a wage, for money. Well, that was way back when there was even no jobs like that. And they're still trying to teach our kids how to get a job, and it's not working. And we've had a big controversy over this part of it, because the way we look at it, the only thing that education has ever done is take your children away from you in their mind. And what we have done since the beginning is we ate up our children to the school system, and they became separate from us. They couldn't talk anymore. We couldn't communicate. Not only did they took us away, you know, to White Mountain, to Eklutna, to Edgecombe, to Wrangell, to Chimawa. What they were doing was they were trying to make a little Nalalmi out of your children. And you know how many of them know how many never came back. They got. It's just like a string to me, this Inupiaq continuity. Goes back maybe 20,000 years or more. But what's been happening is, just like those Nalalmis who came from Europe, it started to break. And that's what's been happening to our people. What's been missing, the way we look at it, and the only thing that's going to hold us together in the future, or even today, is what we call the Inupiaq Ilitqusert, or being Inupiaq, the Inupiaq way. No matter
If you're in politics and you don't have that Inupiaq identity and try to represent our Inupiaq people, how do you know what is right? Unless you're Inupiaq in your head, and in your heart, and in the way you see. And how can we possibly put anybody on the board of NANA or in the management to run our business unless they're Inupiaq? In their mind. I don't care if they're 1/8 Inupiaq. If they're Inupiaq in their mind and in their heart, that's good. But we cannot give responsibility in the future to people who want to run NANA unless they're Inupiaq. Because the pressures on us have been great from the beginning. 15 years now since we started NANA. Nobody wanted us to be strong because they wanted to control us. And we look back and we see that our people, not only are the old people dying because they're getting old, but our children are becoming the Lao Mi in the head. And we cannot trust them with the responsibility of holding our people's land. Then we've been educating our children to leave us. No matter how much education we give them or they get, what good is it to us, our people, unless they're in Inupiaq? We cannot give them a responsibility in NANA unless we have to stand over them like we do the rest of the Nalao Mi who work for us. So what we're going to try to do while we're